This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudy. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show. I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio today is Lindy West. Lindy is a contributing opinion writer for the New York Times. Her memoir, Shrill, came out last year. Lindy, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I just want the people to know that I just had to retake the top of this episode because I accidentally called myself Lindy West because I was looking at your name.
The most flattering thing that's ever happened to me.
It's just really good for everyone to know I have so much strength of character and ability to focus and concentrate that sometimes when I'm doing my own show, I forget my own name. So you should absolutely turn to me for all your advice-giving needs. Lindy, I was originally going to open the show by talking about how the greatest episode of television in human history is the Death Trap episode of Frasier, where they reignite the Crane Boys mysteries. But actually, something came down the pike this morning in the live chat that was so... I think I blacked out for a minute. It was so intense that I have to talk about it right now on the show with you. I hope that you are emotionally prepared.
I think so.
So the question was from this woman who usually when somebody sends me a letter, even if I think it's pretty clear that they're in the wrong, there is at least some attempt on their part to mitigate or justify what action they have taken where you kind of have to read between the lines. And I have never before gotten a letter that, like, so clearly and perfectly indicted the letter writer themselves as this one did. This one was basically this woman's daughter was getting married. This woman's daughter had a best friend named Katie, who that she had known since she was four. They were best friends. Katie was going to be one of her bridesmaids. And Katie walks with a limp. And the letter writer said, I think it's going to look unsightly. And that we, so I asked my daughter if we could have Katie sit down during the ceremony and maybe have her just take video or hand out programs while sitting instead of being your maid of honor so that she doesn't, quote unquote, ruin the aesthetic aspect of the wedding.
Oh my God.
And, you know,
if we could just have Katie positioned behind a screen, maybe
like
in
a tree.
Other room.
Yeah. And then it just ends with, my daughter is no longer speaking to me. We were never that close, but this is her wedding and I want it to be perfect. It's changed
what?
Me at on a chemical and genetic level. I mean, it's so like, do you hear yourself? Like, I have to apply the usual test to it, which is like, if you reread your own letter, do you sound like the villain from a Reese Witherspoon movie? And if so, how can you change your entire life?
What advice is she looking for?
It closed with, is it wrong to have her friend sit out? Which, at the very least, is the right question to be asking, right? Like, she's at least not saying, how do I get my daughter to forgive me or see my point of view?
Right.
Or
don't you agree that Katie is a little unsightly?
Yeah. So, you know, I was at least able to answer that question for what it's worth, listeners. I do believe that it's wrong and addressed it more fully in the column. But this one was just remarkable. It's been a while since I got a letter that was that clear-cut. Like cartoonish villainy, you might as well be twirling your mustache and tying somebody to the railroad tracks. Just bad.
Right. Like, I wonder if you could somehow remove that letter from its context and show it to her as though it was written by somebody else, if she would be aghast.
I mean, A of
you know
all,
what I mean?
That's exactly what the prophet Nathan did to King David in the Old Testament, and it totally worked. So good.
I was thinking
biblical
of that
strategy.
I was thinking of that Mr. Show sketch when they show the metal band videos of them having gay sex and they think it's awesome. And then they're like, now we're going to swap this video with a video of gay porn. And then it's the same video. And they're like, oh, sick. Anyway, never mind.
I'm just really glad that we got to work in Mr. Show and the Bible as two references for how we could handle this person. Either one is good. Just, yeah, what a time to be alive. I try not to run too many letters that are just clearly the letter writer is being a jerk, because I don't want it to become a column where I just yell at people. But yeah, sometimes someone really needs to be yelled at.
I mean, you could write a novel based on that prompt.
I cannot imagine how you make that suggestion to someone.
Can we like make a GoFundMe to send Katie an edible arrangement or something?
I want Katie to have all the good things in life. I mean, hopefully Katie never finds out, right? Like, hopefully this is never communicated to Katie, because she doesn't need to carry around the psychic weight of that garbage.
Yeah.
Anyways, so there you go. If anyone was curious, is Dear Prudence for or against kicking people out of bridal parties because they walk with a limp? I'm against it. I think that that's bad and ableist and bad, and you shouldn't do it. So with that out of the way, I want to start with the very first letter, which is also about someone who is making a bad choice. I'm really excited to get to address this one with you, Lindy. I'm going to go ahead and read it, and then we will take turns reading the letters, because I care about reciprocity. So the subject line of this one is just irregular periods. Dear Prudence, my boyfriend is very disgusted by period blood, which is understandable. Period blood is gross. And because of that, we don't have sex when I'm on my period. I'm perfectly happy with this, and I feel that all my needs are fulfilled. However, I'm on a type of birth control that messes up my cycle, so I have irregular periods, which means I don't always know when it's going to start. Because of this, about every 2 to 3 months, I find out I'm on my period in the middle of sex with my boyfriend, who proceeds to freak out, immediately end our intimacy, and usually never pick it back up again, then try to distract himself from what just happened for the rest of the night and doesn't want to talk about it. Meanwhile, I'm left feeling hurt and neglected, abandoned in the middle of sex, and since I'm extra hormonal, I end up crying. My boyfriend always says that he's not mad at me and doesn't blame me. He knows I can't help it, but I can't help feeling that he resents me and that he's making my period all about his trauma from touching and seeing the period blood, which 50% of the population has to deal with as a normal fact of our lives. As a result, we both end up angry with each other. I'm mad at him for ignoring my emotional needs, and he's mad at me for bleeding on him and then crying about it. Do you have any advice for how we can avoid this mutual anger every time I'm on my period? You know, normally I try to read letters as neutrally as possible. I don't like to give a lot of clues about where I'm at when I'm reading them, but I just gave up on that one real quickly in this letter. I gave up and I sailed away to Feelings Island. I sure do have some advice. Lindy, what advice do you have for these folks?
I'm really curious to hear which Feelings Island you're on. My instincts are men need to get a grip. Like, I mean, obviously it's not nice to bleed all over someone non-consensually. But generally in heterosexual intercourse, women have to deal with a not super pleasant male bodily fluid. I don't know. I mean,
Lindy, oh my gosh. I mean, that's just a normal part of sex, not a freaky witch eruption that menstruation is.
I just feel like the way that we treat menstruation like this, it's this unspeakable act.
I'm not here to tell you that unless you are like animatedly eating your girlfriend out while she's on her period, that you're a bad person. Like, you don't have to enjoy having sex with someone who's actively menstruating to be a good boyfriend. But this is fucking ridiculous. And like, frankly, the fact that you haven't chopped your boyfriend in half with an axe is a remarkable act of restraint.
Yeah.
Once again, I do not advocate chopping anyone in half. I don't think that you should resort to violence. This is outrageous. This guy is, if this were like a 12-year-old, well, A of all, I'd be concerned that a 12-year-old was having sex. But like, his response to period blood is it's embarrassing for a child, and that he's a grown man doing this on a like semi-regular basis. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Like, I just want you to know, letter writer, this is not like, two reasonable people disagreeing. Your boyfriend is being absurd.
Yeah. And, you know what might help is if he didn't run away every time he saw period blood.
You know what else might help? Breaking up with him.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't want to, like, come out the gate with, like, dump him, he sucks. But dump him, he sucks.
Yeah, the fact that she cries and then he gets mad at her. that even just that part of it is beyond.
No, like he freaks out, jumps out of bed, spends the rest of the night like rocking back and forth in a corner, trying to calm down from the trauma of having like come near a period, like she's ridden with cooties, is just like the enormity of his response and the degree to which he will flee from you as if you should be confined to like a menstrual hut and shunned until you are clean again is,
yeah.
I can't believe that you even a little bit feel like, how do we compromise on this? Like there should not be a compromise.
What's a great fix? Turn the lights off. Can't see it. Like, you'd never even know it was there. You know what I mean?
I can't imagine. It's one thing to generally prefer not to have sex with someone when they're on their period. Fine, whatever. If that's not for you, that's not for you. If you find out someone's bleeding a little bit in the middle of sex and you just, it just kills the mood for you, your boner, like, moves away to the moon, and you're just absolutely done. Fine. But then just calmly remove your genitals from her genitals and like get a paper towel, wipe both of yourselves off, and then say something like, hey, sorry about that. Do you like, and like check and see, like, does she want to finish? How is she doing? How is she feeling? This is going to keep happening every month-ish for a long time. And it's just blood from her uterus. That's all it is. You don't have to love it. It doesn't have to be your favorite thing in the world. You don't have to put some in your like morning smoothie every day. But if this guy, like just the thought of his dick touching something that was inside your uterus makes him like throw himself in a basement for 24 hours and ignore you when you cry, then this guy's an immature, misogynistic asshole.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, if this is me, I'm dumping this guy. I don't care how great he is the rest of the time. If he is responding with this level of like paralysis and panic and terror and get your cooties away from me every couple of months. Like there are guys out there who are not like that. You know, there are guys out there who are like, a period. It's a biological function that some people have. Fine.
Also, I'm going to like make you touch my ejaculate or potentially put it in your mouth, so maybe I could chill out about I mean not to get too graphic, I apologize, I just feel like
we left like not being graphic behind a while ago.
The degree to which women are expected to be delighted by semen is oppressive.
Transported with joy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, listen, man, you can get a little bit of it's not even like, well, no, I was, that was going to go too far. No, it's not too far. It's not like it's old and it's been sitting around. Like, it's like fresh and clean blood from the inside of a human.
Look, you know what here's I mean? The deal. I don't want to like litigate whether or not somebody needs to like period blood. Like, that's not the issue. The issue is
no, I don't personally like it. I don't enjoy it.
Sure.
Personally.
But like, he says he's not mad at you and doesn't blame you. Like, the fact that that's where he's at emotionally is like, he fucking shouldn't. That's like saying, look, darling, I'm not mad at you for converting oxygen into carbon dioxide several times a minute. Like, of the fact that he even thinks that he has the right to say that he's not mad at you for sometimes menstruating is bananas. Like, this is baby town frolics bonkers.
Bare minimum, it should be framed as him having a hang up, not her making a mistake.
Right. Like, guy, she's not bleeding on you on purpose. It's not like she secretly knows when her period's about to start and then it's like, yeah, I'm going to bleed all over his dick and not tell him. It's also just period blood. It will wipe off. Lots of people have periods. You should be okay with that. Like, bare minimum, your response to her menstruating in the middle of sex should just be like, oh, let me go grab some baby wipes. Maybe, like, shake it off a minute in the bathroom. Like, I mean, emotionally shake it off. I don't mean, like, actually shake it off your dick. Like, clean yourself better than that. And then, like, move on with your life, because you're an adult human being who touched a little blood for a second. And again, it's not like he has some sort of, like, traumatizing blood phobia. He's just being a misogynistic piece of shit. And frankly, I would take joy in choreographing a dumping that would result in me, like, pirouetting away over a bunch of synchronized swimmers or something. Like, it would bring me so much joy to dump this guy.
I feel like I should say that this happened to me once. This exact thing happened to me.
Once? Not except every 2 to 3 months the whole time you were together?
No, just once. Uh-huh. And I'm not particularly interested in having sex when I'm on my period, but now it's not something that I do on purpose.
Yeah.
Because, like, you kind of, I mean, I don't know, I feel disgusting when I'm on my period.
Everybody has super different responses. Some people are into it.
Totally.
Some people hate it. Some people are kind of in the middle. All of them are fine.
Yeah. But I did have a surprise period one time during sex, just like this gal. And the guy, we had been dating for a couple months and he never called me again. He, like, freaked out, ran away, jumped in the shower, was super weird, and then dumped me.
Yeah.
Which was fine. I was kind of relieved, but.
Yeah. But I think in general, it's just a good idea. If there's something that nearly half the population experiences on a monthly basis, and they are able to deal with it without, like, do you know what I mean? Like, most people who menstruate aren't every month, like, screaming in horror at themselves, like, oh no, it's here again. Like,
right.
Even if it's really unpleasant or, you know, really unwanted, it's still generally like, yeah, I can handle this. I know how to deal with this. I know how to keep, like, myself clean and deal with the hygiene of menstruating. So for somebody who doesn't menstruate to have that response is just ridiculous and unnecessary.
Yeah.
And I hate him.
Hate him too.
Yeah. I bet he likes all the things that I don't like. And I bet he doesn't orderly get in line in a zipper merge on the freeway. And I bet he doesn't use his blinker when he turns lanes. And I hate him.
I bet he doesn't give a courtesy wave.
When people let him in?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet you're right. I bet you're so right.
I bet he gives the finger instead.
I bet he doesn't come to a complete stop at stop signs. Because they're red and it reminds him of menstruation. And the thought of that is so terrifying, he has to flee.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we got to stop just hating on this one guy, because I could dedicate the rest of my life to doing that, but I really shouldn't. Would you please read our next letter?
Yes. Subject line, cold feet. Dear Prudence, my fiance and I have been together for 7 years now and engaged for the past 5. And every time we try to move forward with the wedding, something happens and we postpone it for a later date. I should note that I don't live with him, nor do I have a copy of his house key. He doesn't want me to have one for some weird reason, and I respected his wishes and stopped asking for one. In fact, every time I'm about to move in with him the month or two before we're supposed to get married, something happens. The first time, he was moving and didn't want to get married in transit. The second time, he let his friend, who is going through a divorce, live with him for 2 months, so we had to postpone again. Then his father died, and then he moved again to be closer to his mother, and then he took in another friend who needed a place to stay. This keeps happening, and the latest postponement came at a time when I needed to renew my lease, but wasn't sure if I was moving in with him or not. I don't have an issue with him helping his friends. What I have an issue with is that he talks about how, since we're going to get married, that we're a team, but he only gave me a heads up on them moving in after the fact. I never got to have a discussion with him about how this might affect our relationship and plans. Our wedding that was supposed to be in October has been canceled, and he didn't seem to even care, and overall, he seems to have an attitude towards me. It's like he's got tunnel vision, because it's his friends, and forget any plans or promises made with me. I'm getting tired of having to put our plans on hold, because he's got to play the knight in shining armor. Sometimes, I feel like I'm being too sensitive about all this, but the few family and friends that I've told about this have all said I'm not wrong for being upset. They don't think he wants to get married, and honestly, I'm starting to think so too. I'm tempted to just call everything off, the engagement and relationship, but I feel stuck due to our long history, and I don't know what to do. Any advice?
Lindy, I just want you to know that originally this letter was roughly 3 times longer than this.
Wow.
With just like further detail on how many times this dude has called off their wedding.
Right. I mean, don't get married, obviously.
I mean, I honestly don't know that she could get married. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. I don't know that getting married to this guy is an option.
Right. But what is, I mean, what is their relationship? I mean, there's nothing, you know, usually it seems like when people are conflicted about, you know, not wanting to break up, they list some things that they like about the person.
Right. This does not have you that. Know, that was not something that I edited out, by the way. There was never any of that in here.
There's just nothing, you know, just, oh, well, we put in 7 years, so I guess we should stick with it.
Yep.
Which is not.
And I think that's what it is, right? Like, the only thing that the letter writer mentions is towards the end is, I feel stuck due to our long history. Just don't, is my advice. Don't feel stuck because of that. Like, that is the sunk cost fallacy. And I understand it's a little dismissive to say, like, just stop feeling that way and make a decision. But, like, you know, you just wrote an incredibly long letter to an advice columnist, basically giving a list of reasons why you think this guy doesn't want to marry you. And I agree with you. He doesn't want to marry you. He does want to keep putting it off indefinitely. He will continue to prioritize everyone else in his life before you. This is not a series of accidents. These are a series of choices. He doesn't want to marry you. The long history between the two of you is not an incentive to stay. It is a millstone that will keep you from moving in a direction that actually makes you happy. So if you want, you can stick with this guy for as long as he's willing to jerk you around. I'm sure he would be willing to pretend to want to set a wedding date a couple more times and then invite a bunch of other people to move in with him instead. But getting married to him is not an option. You can either keep getting rejected by him while you're with him, or you can say, I'm done here. I have sufficient information to know that even if we got married tomorrow, I would not feel like I was marrying someone who was excited about me. You got to walk away.
Yeah, generally, you know, if you can, if you're putting up, if you're even entertaining these two choices, like, should we get married or should we break up? You should break up.
Right.
I mean, if that's even on the table, do not marry that person. Right. And also, you know, like, even if this was all innocent, like, which it's not, but say, imagine that he really does desperately want to get married, but things keep getting in the way. There's going to be things for the rest of your lives. You know, parents die, friends get divorced, people need help. And if you're a couple and you are a team, you go through those things together. They don't interrupt your relationship. They don't get, you know, it's there. That's never going to go away. There's never going to be a time when you don't have any distractions or any interruptions in your life. Life's only going to get more complicated, and you only get to live one time. And this sounds miserable. He has an attitude with you.
to marry him.
My God. Run, don't walk away from this horrible person.
Yeah, I want you and the woman whose boyfriend shrieks in horror whenever someone has a period near him to just go on like a long Thelma and Louise style road trip.
Oh my God, seriously?
That's what I want for you. But yeah, no, this is incredibly clear cut. You're not really in a relationship at all. And I think you should go ahead and acknowledge that and say, I'm done. I think that that is the only way that you are going to ever possibly be in a relationship that makes you happy. And don't let the length of your previous relationship convince you to like throw more time into it. You'll just lose more time.
Yeah. Oh man. And she's going to feel so good when she's away from him, you know?
Oh, and she's so going to realize like, oh, right. Like, forward momentum in a relationship isn't weird and impossible, and I don't have to like accommodate someone else's like sudden wild changes in strategy constantly. Like, it's not that hard to get married. You know what I mean? Like, it can be hard to plan a wedding. There can be a lot, but like, people dumber and worse than you, letter writer, get married all the time. it's not hard to get married if you have two people who really want to marry each other. If what you have is one person who wants to get married and one other person who is, for whatever reason, happy with the status quo, it will seem like, oh, it's just so hard. Life's so dramatic. These things keep getting in the way. And it's like, no, it's not. People get married in prison. People get married at sea. People get married in the midst of like painful diagnoses and when their family members are dying. And during times of war, it is not hard to get married if both people want to get married.
Nope.
All right. Well, you know, in a similar vein, actually, is this next letter. So would you please read it to us? And then hopefully we'll be able to end on something a little less intense.
Yeah. Subject, sex offender in the family. Dear Prudence, my husband's family is pretty close. They all live in the same small town and regularly drop by. Our niece, who is 3, is watched daily by her grandparents, who live a few doors down. The issue is that her grandfather is a sex offender as well as a functional alcoholic. His offense was committed against a very close family member, but it happened in the 80s, so he's not listed in any of the registries. Also, the grandmother is my husband's stepmom because his biological mom divorced his dad after the incident. I've heard that the grandfather's wife never believed her husband committed this crime, even though he was jailed for it. Apparently, the great-grandparents stood up for their son, blaming the young family member for the indiscretion. We do not think my husband's brother and sister-in-law, who are entrusting their child, our niece, to her grandparents, know about the sex offense. But maybe they do know and have decided to trust him anyway. I would not allow my daughter to be in that house on a daily basis without myself or my husband present. I would definitely want to know if my father-in-law was a sex offender, but for years we have remained silent because of the possible repercussions by spilling the beans. My husband loves his family and doesn't want to cause waves. Also, my husband thinks the family member who was molested needs to be the one to share this info, not us. He says it's her news and her life. I partially agree. I believe my niece may be in danger, especially because her grandpa is an alcoholic. I've been stewing for years, wanting to tell my sister-in-law, but haven't. I've also encouraged my husband to bring it up. Again, maybe she already knows. What should we do? I mean, make sure that she knows, first of all, right?
Yep.
I mean, she should know. I mean, I wondered when I was reading this letter if there's a level of awkwardness there where it's been years that they've been watching their niece go over to this house to be taken care of by a sex offender and haven't said anything, that, you know, if the sister-in-law doesn't know, it's kind of horrifying to bring it up now. Hey, by the way, we've had this information all this time,
right?
But we didn't mention it to you.
Right. It's pretty, I mean, and this is distressingly common, right? Is when somebody in the family commits sexual assault, even if they do something like go to jail for it, oftentimes the extended family will kind of close ranks around the offender and imply or outright say that the person who was victimized is a troublemaker or making things up or just generally, you know, not on their team. And they will sort of, you know, let that person go and protect the person who committed the offense. And that's just really awful. And it's a real failure of the moral imagination. So I want to also acknowledge, too, that I don't think that an appropriate response in general for someone who has been convicted of a sex offense is that they should always be followed around everywhere for the rest of their lives and prevented from, you know, pursuing rehabilitation or changing their lives. Like, I do want to acknowledge that. But I would say this. There does not appear to be any sign of acknowledgement or remorse on the grandfather's part, especially given that he married someone who believes he did not commit the offense for which he was not only arrested but convicted, suggests that he has really latched onto that fantasy where he did not, in fact, molest a young relative, which does not speak much of his, you know, ability to pursue change. And that just, I think also, you know, there are ways in which, without saying someone is doomed to never be redeemed or rehabilitated, it is also really appropriate to say a person who has gone to jail for molesting a child probably does not need to be looking after children ever. Like, if for no other reason, then why would you put yourself in the position of putting yourself in the way of temptation? Like, that's not... You're not interfering with his right to work or pursue a new life. Like, this pretty clearly seems like a bad situation where dishonesty and deception are abounding. So with all that said, I think you should absolutely tell the girl's parents. I think you should say, I'm really sorry for not bringing this up sooner. I have felt uncertain and uncomfortable. Grandpa was arrested in the 1980s for sexually assaulting a child. His conviction is probably a matter of public record, even if he's not on a sex offender registry. You know, my guess is there is an arrest record of some kind. And because the child's name would have been redacted in the original report, you don't necessarily need to, you know, name or point to the person it was. I think your husband, his desire to, you know, let the victim decide whether or not she wants to tell her own story is a good one. But there are also ways to make it clear that he has done something, you know, violent and wrong to a child without sort of naming names. And I think to put the burden on her of, well, if she wants to make sure he doesn't babysit kids in his old age, she has to follow up and make sure she knows what he's doing. That's too much to put on a victim, I think.
Especially, I mean, yeah, she's already been through the incident, the abuse itself. Then she was rejected by her family. Now it's her responsibility to bring all that up again, you know, face the same possibility of being told that she's a liar again by her same, you know, supposedly close family. You know, what a horrible thing to put on a person.
Right. That's too
especially
much.
When it is. Yeah. When it is almost certainly public record. And, you know, it's not easy to get convicted
right.
of abusing a child. Our system is set up not, you know, our system, if our system has a sort of bias, it's in the other direction.
Right.
And there aren't, the idea that there are kids going around falsely accusing beloved family members of abuse for fun, and then, you know, those false accusations routinely end in false convictions. I mean, that's...
I mean, there was the satanic daycare panic in, what, the early 1980s, and that was like a very
sure.
sad and upsetting moment.
Sure.
I think that was like one or two people. And you're absolutely right. The way in which that looms large. Yes, if he was convicted, that's plenty to talk about without bringing the person into it. And frankly, you know, now that I'm looking over this letter again, the fact that your husband says he loves his family and doesn't want to cause waves makes me think he's not exactly concerned about like this person's autonomy and wants to make sure she tells her own story. He doesn't want to have an uncomfortable conversation about the fact that his father is a convicted child molester. And that's just too fucking bad.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, you know, there's no universe in which that child, if they are being abused, wouldn't grow up and say, oh my God, I wish someone had stepped in and done something. And you can be that person, you know, whether it's happening or not, maybe it's not happening, but you have the opportunity to be that person who changes that child's life. And I mean, you know, she says in the letter, we've remained silent because of the possible repercussions by spilling the beans. And then she doesn't list any repercussions. What are the possible repercussions? Some uncomfortable conversations with your family members,
right.
with your alcoholic family member that you think might be molesting a 3-year-old.
Yeah, that sounds like a good repercussion, actually.
Yeah,
I think repercussions are necessary. And I think you need to say to your husband, like, I would love it if we could do this together. It's important and meaningful to me. If you're not willing to do that, if you're more afraid of making waves than of naming reality, I will do this without you. And you're going to need to, you know, that's going to be scary. And I'm sure your husband is going to come up with a lot of good reasons why you should all just like plug your ears and look in the other direction while singing loudly. But this is the right thing to do. And frankly, if you say to your sister-in-law, I have, you know, been remiss in not talking about this with you sooner. I'm so sorry I didn't do this sooner. But I want you to know that, you know, our grandfather is an alcoholic and a convicted child molester. And I wanted to make sure you knew that because he looks after your daughter. If her response is, yeah, I knew, then that was still worth having that conversation, frankly, because then I think you will have an opportunity to express your concern about her daughter's health and safety to her. Yeah. And that is a conversation you should have. I understand it will be embarrassing. I understand it will be painful. I understand people may get defensive and angry with you for making waves. This is worth making waves for. Whether or not you get your husband's support, like, just say, I'd love to have it if I can, but if you lack the courage to have a difficult, uncomfortable conversation about the care and safety of a three-year-old girl, I'll do it without you, man.
Yeah. And if you do have that conversation with your sister-in-law and she is angry with you for not telling her sooner, if she didn't know and she says, oh, my God, why didn't you tell me? She's justified in being angry.
Yes. You know, and that's okay. And
that's okay. And you need to absorb that discomfort.
Yep. Especially because, like you yourself say, I would never leave him alone with my kid and I would want to know. So go ahead and treat her like you would want to be treated. You already know what the right thing to do is. But the family's general fear and aversion to the truth is starting to get to you and you're starting to think, well, maybe I shouldn't do something for her that I would want someone to do for me. No, you already know what the right thing is and you need to do it and you need to do it now.
Yeah.
Man. Woof. All right. Yeah. So we've got one more letter that's on a slightly less, I mean, it's still complicated, but it's slightly less soul crushing. And that's always a good note to move to. But the subject of this one is just a mixed orientation marriage. Dear Prudence, I'm a woman who's been married to a man for 12 years. We have two small children. Before we got married, I told my husband I was bisexual, which I thought was the correct way to describe myself at the time. Now, over a decade later, it would probably be more accurate to say that I'm gay. My repressed sexuality bothers me sometimes, but most of the time I tell myself that I have a good marriage, and for me, a cohesive family unit is much more important than sexual fulfillment. I fully acknowledge that other people might feel differently in this situation. I do, however, experience isolation at times. Everyone in my life, for good reason, thinks I'm straight. I've thought of attending some type of LGBT support group, but I'm concerned that I might be harshly judged for my choices to live a straight life while gay. I also don't want to offend anyone, and I'm afraid the queer community will be personally offended by my lifestyle. Do you think trying to find some type of LGBT community while in a heterosexual marriage will cause more harm than good?
I kind of feel like this letter's kind of sweet. Like, it just doesn't go in the direction that you expect it to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I'm worried about betraying my husband by living my identity. It's, I'm worried about betraying, like, am I betraying my identity by staying with my husband? She doesn't seem to be interested in leaving her husband, which is, I mean, do you get that impression?
You know, it sounds, I mean, it's not even an impression. Like, she outright says that she is more committed to keeping her family together in a marriage than in, you know, like coming out and being with a woman. So her choice is really clear. I had a letter this morning in the live chat from somebody whose mom just came out as a lesbian after being married to their dad for 20 years and ways in which the oldest child had like helped her hide dating apps from her husband. And it was a real mess. And not to say that that's like necessarily in this letter writer's future. I just want to throw out there that sometimes our ability to predict how long we will be able to continue to do something is sometimes a little bit skewed. So I don't want to say you should or have to leave, especially with two small children. I really do understand that the choice you've made feels worth it to you. But I think you're going to need that support, especially as your kids get older. And it feels a little bit less immediate, like I need to stay in this family and be a mom and be married to their dad, that there may come times when the choice you have made right now feels harder and more painful. You may meet somebody who kind of sets your world upside down and you didn't really know you could feel that intensely about somebody. And that might prove really hard. Again, not to say you shouldn't be making the choice that you're making, but I think you will need that support because what you're doing is hard. And it sounds like also rewarding and that you care for your husband in a real and meaningful way. But I do think that you should seek out support. And I think especially if you're looking, you know, it's not like you're looking to go to a gay bar on the weekends and be like, this is my husband. Everyone help me manage this. Like, you know, support groups are for support. And you should hopefully be able to look for one. Sometimes in some towns there are support groups for LGBT people in like quote unquote heterosexual marriages. Like, this is not at all something that's unheard of. This happens a lot. This has happened historically a lot. So there may, in fact, be groups for people in exactly your situation.
Yeah. I mean, also, you know, you're going to die eventually. You know, you get one life. And I think it's important to at least have this conversation with your husband. And there are all kinds of families living with alternative family structures that work really well for them. And I don't think the only two options are heterosexual marriage or mixed orientation marriage or divorce. Right. You know, I mean, you can raise kids with someone that you're not intimate with, someone that you're not married to. There are a lot of options outside of, you know, staying in this traditional family structure that doesn't allow you to, I mean, and I don't know, I'm putting words in her mouth. Maybe she does feel fulfilled in this marriage. I have no idea. But, you know, that potentially doesn't let you fully live a fulfilling life, you know, live every aspect of who you are. So, you know, it just seems, she doesn't say anything about her husband being unsupportive or her husband, you know, being afraid to talk to her husband. So talk to your husband, you know?
I think that's a good idea. I think she might be at a point where she feels like saying I was bisexual to my husband was as close as I could get to the truth. If I tell him any more, then that's going to start to like spread cracks in the foundation of our marriage. And again, that's not to say you need to come home tomorrow and say like, I'm not really attracted to you at all. Surprise. But if you can find ways to, at the very least, say like, it would be helpful to me to sometimes go to a support group for queer women, you know, just something so that it's not something you totally have to keep from him. Yes, absolutely. But your question is, should I go? Will I offend people? You know, I want to say, hopefully not at all, but it is possible that there will be some people who try to give you a hard time about that. I apologize in advance. I think, you know, what you are doing is not like taking up space from anybody else. You are not trying to impose your choices on anyone else. You're not doing anything that's offensive or wrong. You belong at an LGBT support group because you are a lesbian who needs support. So absolutely, I think you can and should find a place with support groups. And, you know, if you're anxious about that, you can bring that up. You can say, I think I'm gay and I'm nervous because I believe I want to at least try to continue to stay with my husband for right now. And I'm worried that people are going to judge my choice and what I want is support. But I think that's worth doing. I think you should do it. I don't think you're going to be met with just a wall of, you know, horror and offense and get out. I don't think that that's going to be the overwhelming response.
And if you are, maybe you should find a different support group because that doesn't sound very supportive.
Yeah, that's a bad support group for sure.
But I mean, not that it's my place to tell queer people how they should feel about who's in their support group. But, you know, I mean, it's a support group.
Right. No, I think you are qualified to speak on the nature of giving somebody support.
Yeah. And sorry I said that you're going to die. I just meant
it's true.
Eventually we all do.
Yeah.
And based on the evidence that we have, this might be your only one, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I also understand that, you know, divorce is not, especially with little kids, it's not something to be undertaken lightly, and that for a lot of people, they might feel really happy, not necessarily, like, thrilled all the time, but, like, that choice might be worth it and meaningful to them. And, like, I don't think that if you have decided to stay with your husband, then it means you are, you know, making the wrong choice or denying yourself. Like, obviously it's not a choice you might make if you met him right now, but like you're only working with what you've got. And I think your choice is an understandable one. I wish you the best. I hope you're able to find just maximal fulfillment and contentedness and companionship in your marriage. And that it proves meaningful to you to go to, you know, queer support groups and talk about what you're going through, because it's important and it matters. All right, Lindy, we did it.
We did it.
We fixed everyone's problems.
This was so fun.
Thank you for helping me heal the world.
You're so good at this.
Well,
I'm always like, I don't know.
I do have to know. It would be a very short podcast if I did not have a lot of opinions. I do like how, like, I always start the podcast really swinging, like, chop your boyfriend in half with an axe. And then by the end, I'm like, oh, life is such a journey and a process. And who's to say what's right and what's wrong for you? So hopefully everyone got a different cross section of my opinions today.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, take care. See you later.
Thank you. You too. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/dearprudence to subscribe. Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops.